Vibe tribes.
This guy. What's the feedback saying on that intro still? Is it still good?
Yeah, I need to work with a producer, I think, to put something a little bit more official in. But, you know, for now, I'm going to keep it going. But, yeah, welcome back to the Vibes and Tribes podcast with your host, Bio. Today, we're going to start something new and a little different, but all still under the Vibes and Tribes umbrella. But what I'll be coining it is getting to know the tribe. So I think, you know, there's a common misconception in the world that in order to be successful, you kind of have to be famous. So through a range of different kind of interviews and, you know, invitations and speaking to people on the podcast, I'm going to kind of debunk that myth. So getting us kicked off is Simon. So thank you, Simon. For those of you who have not met him before, you want to quickly introduce yourself?
Yeah. Well, everyone's probably met me from the earlier episode. But, yeah. Welcome, people. As Bio said, they need to be successful to be, they need to be famous to be successful. And I'm completely unknown to most. So, yeah,
I definitely but you are successful.
To some, I'd say, yeah, to some people, they'd say I'm successful. But yeah.
Perfect. So, before we get into it, make sure you like, subscribe, follow, all them things. It's going to be in the description, but yeah, with that we'll get straight into it. So Simon, what is your job title right now
currently? So my job title is indirect tax transformation consultant.
Okay, and what does that involve?
So essentially what my job is I work with large corporates and we review the processes, the costs, the structures of how they're carrying out sort of the taxation processes around the world, and we look for ways where we can improve efficiencies, save money, automize and digitalize out certain processes.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
There's a lot to it. It sounds very techie.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to it.
Okay, no, cheers for that. But before we even, you know, talk about what you're doing right now, I think where I really want to see this pod go is just understand your journey up until this point. So we're going to take it way, way, way back. And let's start with secondary school. So what secondary school did you go to?
I went to a school called the John Fisher School.
The John Fisher School.
John Fisher School, all boys Roman Catholic school.
Okay. Was it private? Was it state school?
So John Fisher used to be private, but okay. No, they went changed to an independent Roman Catholic school.
Okay.
I can't remember when, sometime like the mid-90s or something like that.
Okay.
But they say it's meant to be on par with the private schools, so it was a rugby school.
Okay.
So yeah, we used to like play against all the big like private rugby schools.
Okay.
Like Eton and all those type of schools.
Oh, did you? Yeah, oh shit! Yeah. And did you go to John Fisher from, was it 7 to 11 or from 7 to 13?
So it was meant to be 7 to 11. For the first year, I went to another school called Thomas More.
Okay.
Mum and Dad weren't impressed with the results I was getting from there, so they ripped me out of there. So yeah, from year 8 to year 11, went year to John 8. Fisher.
Okay, cool. And so you did your GCSEs there?
Did GCSEs there.
Yeah, how did you do, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, GCSEs did reasonably well. Like, okay. Didn't do that bad. I got the standard ones, like where you get like 9 to 11 ACCs.
Yeah, enough
to get me like a good job, I guess.
Yeah. And did you enjoy school?
I definitely enjoy school. You know when mum and dad talk back to like, well, for different reasons though, I think, because some people enjoyed school for the learning. I just enjoyed school. Like when you look back, it's definitely the funnest times of your life, definitely.
Not for me, but you know.
Not
we'll
for
get,
you.
We'll get into that another time, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, definitely enjoy school. Like, it's weird, it's because like I said, it was an all-boys school.
Mm.
So like, yeah, just the behaviours.
Yeah.
How we used to be, it was like a big, like, I was going to say brotherhood, that sounds so deep. I really did like school.
Okay, and I suppose just, you know, focusing on the tribe's concept, would you say you're in touch with a lot of people that you went to school with now, or a few people?
Just a few, like the odd few. I think there was definitely like pockets, like there was groups of people in school who sort of, like, they'd grown up from primary school and they've all stayed in contact. I was that type of person, I sort of just floated around different groups.
Mm.
I never really had like one main group, so I haven't really kept in contact with like a main bulk group of people, but like, I've got the odd person here or there.
Okay. And this is a little bit random, but do you keep in contact with any teachers? Did you have a good relationship with any of the teachers?
Nah, definitely keep in contact with teachers, but a lot of them lived around like where the school was in Purley, so
yeah,
like, my
yeah,
mum
yeah.
and dad live in Purley, so like, sometimes like I'd just be out.
And you'd catch him on the road. Teachers. Yeah.
I remember there was one teacher, there was a teacher that used to do classics, and classics was like the one class I just didn't take it seriously. I didn't really get a classic. And I used to terrorize this teacher.
Yeah.
And then I bumped into him in Purley one day. When I was older, I was in my mid-20s, and I was like, I just want to say, by the way, just thinking back now that I'm older, I'm so sorry for
for being terrorism. A pagan.
Yeah, no, I remember one day he was almost like in tears.
No, that's good because I've got a couple of teachers on Facebook and stuff.
Oh, is it?
I wouldn't say I speak to them loads, but struck up like good relationships, like all legitimate. Don't worry, no mad. This happened to me. Let me just say that. But there were some people who some teachers I was quite close with. So I think it's, I don't know if it's normal, but yeah. Not for you.
Everybody comment on that, innit? Is it normal to keep in touch with teachers?
We'll find out. Follow any on Instagram or Facebook. I think it's probably more normalised now than it was then. And I suppose, okay, going back to school, so you've gone to year 11. Did you do college? Did you do sixth form? And did you go straight into the workforce?
Did college, yes. And then I did like engineering and maths, the most random thing. Got to the point after school, I was like, I don't really know what I want to do. Mum and dad recommended like, engineering, it's a career, you know, like African and Caribbean.
God, doctor.
Yeah,
you want to be doctor,
lawyer, accountant.
Yeah.
Engineer, good job, didn't pay well. That's what I did. I had no interest in it at all, though.
Okay,
had no interest in it at all, as you can tell, because obviously the job that I do now has nothing
to do with engineering. Okay. Yeah, so, I was just gonna say, so complete random one. Going back to school and now college. Parents evening, what was that experience like for yourself?
That used to be a scary time. scary time.
Yeah.
I remember I used to try to dodge it sometimes and not tell my mum and dad the dates, but they used to send the letters out to home addresses.
Exactly. So they sent the letters out, and if parents didn't turn up, my school would always contact them.
Yeah,
same. So there was no getting away from it. But yeah, going back to that scary time, I never used to get a good night's sleep the night before parents' evening because I was just shitting a brick because I was like relatively well behaved at school, but the way my dad used to move, it was almost like he was looking for faults. So like, I could have like a great report and they'd be like, yeah, Bio's smashing it in maths, he's doing well, this, that. And then my dad would be like, yeah, look, we know he's doing well, he's got good grades, but does he talk? And you know, he'd just be like counting, like, so he can give me licks when I get back. Was it similar for you? You know, if you got bad grades, were you getting it when you got home?
100%. Yeah, definitely. I think by the time I was in secondary school, like the days of getting like licks, that was done. Like that was more like, that was
speak for yourself.
You were still getting licks in secondary school. Me, it started coming in like the forms of like no pocket money.
Okay.
Or not allowed to go out.
Okay.
Hang out with the friends on the weekend, which used to be a big thing for us because, as I said, we went to an all boys school. So the weekend was the only time we got to see girls. So,
I hear that. Okay, so it really touched you. And would you say, like, you know, I'm not even trying to put your mum and dad under a parenting microscope, would you say that tough love, it helped you to get better grades? Or do you think, like, you would have been the same regardless of the punishment?
I think their parenting was definitely very tough, and it has its pros and its cons. I would say the pros is it definitely keeps you on the straight and narrow. It definitely made ensure that I'd done well, but then I also feel like you have this sort of compellingness to want to rebel. Like,
yeah, I hear you.
I remember, Mum, don't listen to this podcast. I remember once I snuck out at like 1 a.m. in the morning.
Oh my
goodness. I was only like year 9, so what's that, 14, 15 years old?
Yeah, it's about 14.
And that's, it was because of the strictness, because my mum had grounded me from the weekend before, so I hadn't got to see this girl that I was seeing at the time. So I snuck out at 1 a.m. But there's nothing to do. Like,
did you get back in without them noticing?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
They're tired for school. So that's the pros and cons, I think.
Okay.
Of top parent, but it definitely worked in terms of keeping me on the straight and narrow.
Okay, fair enough. So you've just bringing it back. So you've gone to college, you've done engineering, and then what? Was there a decision made between, you know, going to university, not going to university? What was the process, and then how did you come to a decision?
So I think after that I had no idea what I wanted to do. I didn't want to, mum and dad were like, what would you want to do at uni? Like, I don't know. I actually really don't know what I want to do for a career.
And can I just say, sorry to jump in there, I think for people who are, you know, finding their way. If you're about to make a decision to go to university, it is okay not to know. I was exactly the same. I ended up doing economics at university, but it was, you know, I hope my dad don't listen to this. It was because he was pressuring me to do medicine. I just had to make a decision to ensure that I wasn't becoming a doctor. Mm. You get me? So, yeah, sorry, Simon.
Yeah, well, that's I think I got to a point. I was like, well, maybe I'll just do what my mum and dad do. So both my families, we all work in finance. Mum's a financial advisor, dad's an accountant. And I was like, I guess it pays well. So like, I'm going to follow in your footsteps. I want to become an accountant, dad.
Yeah.
How do I do it? And then obviously, I guess the good thing about accountancy, so this, at this time, people were still quite focused on the fact, yeah, you need to go to university to get into like, to have a good job, blah, 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 blah.
Mm.
At this time, accountancy was just sort of, like a lot of the big firms were starting to take like school leavers and put them on. So there's something called AAT.
Okay. What does that stand for?
Association of Accounting Technicians.
Okay. Jeez, the AAT.
So I did that. So I had a few job interviews with like some small companies, and then God knows how, but I got a really good job with an accountancy firm.
Okay.
Trained up with them, qualified with them.
How? Okay. So the two things I want to ask there. You said you had a few interviews. Mm-hmm. So from you finishing college to you landing your job, how long was that process? Because I know for me, I wasn't able, when I finished university, to immediately start a job. So yeah, how long was that process?
That's just a good question, to be fair, because I skipped out a little bit. So from that, the first job I actually had, like, what do you call it? Is an internship?
Yeah.
Where I was working, I was just getting paid travel and lunch. For like a tiny, tiny, tiny small account practice.
That's so mad.
It's mad when you think about it. That's all I was getting paid. And I was doing like really boring jobs.
But
so for some small accountancy firm in West Brompton.
Okay.
And from that, obviously, because it just gave me a little bit of work experience. That gave me something on my CV. And that's when I started doing the interviews.
Okay.
So the interviews did take quite long. So I'd say about 4 or 5 months.
Okay.
Just on, like, it wasn't LinkedIn at the time.
But you have to grind, didn't it? Right. So you just got
just on job websites.
Okay. And then were you handing out CVs, like going into places, or no? It's like kind of applying online, emailing CVs and stuff.
CVs across, talking to recruiters.
Mm.
And then, I managed to finally, I started to get like, build up my confidence in it in job interviews.
Yeah.
And I finally landed that role at Haynes Watt.
And just for people as well who, you know, I've seen stuff on Twitter and they're like, I've applied for 200 jobs and I've not got anything. Mm-hmm. I think perseverance is key. So for you, would you say it was, you know, 0 to 10, 10 to 20?
Loads.
Oh, okay, it was a lot.
I'd say like 80 to 90.
There it is.
And I'd probably say I heard back from 30 of them. You just don't hear back.
Yeah.
And then some of them knock you back. The worst, I think everyone experiences when they're young, the worst response you can get is you currently don't have enough experience for this role.
How am I going to get this experience? Absolute mazza. I've had it myself.
So annoying. Yeah, I definitely feel sorry for the younger people that get that response all the time.
Yeah, there's nothing more infuriating. And then you said, so you're at this place, and how long were you at your first job?
What was your
first job title as well?
Trainee accountant.
Okay, so trainee accountant. Yeah.
Trainee accountant. So I was there for 9 months.
Okay.
And then it was a training contract, and then it was either stay on or go do something else. It was just such a small firm.
Mm-hmm.
The travel was bare far as well.
Oh, okay.
Left there, and I wanted to get into the London city life. So this company was based out in Kingston.
Okay.
I think for a young person trying to come up through the ranks, you want to be in like a buzzy company that's lively and everything like that, and you've got people the same age around you.
This
was a very small firm. I was the only person. I was 18.
It's just about getting your foot in the door, right?
So
that contract finishes. Before that contract finishes, are you already out applying, trying to obtain your next job? Or is it a case that it finishes and you go into the next thing?
I was definitely applying. So I left just... I'd already got the job before my contract had finished.
Oh, okay, perfect.
And then I went to like a... It was an architect firm.
Oh, nice.
To work in their accountancy team.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first... I got fired from that job.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Okay.
Not a lot of people know that, but here I am exposing myself on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
I got fired from that company. And this is, I think this is inexperience of working. So you know the type of attitude you have in school where...
Yeah.
So I got told off for something that I did, and I threw a bit of a tantrum. Like, she started, I did something wrong, and her response to that was obviously take him off that work and make him do basic things.
Yeah,
I was
You
didn't hire, in my mind, I'm like, you didn't hire me to do this shit. Why am I photocopying stuff? Like,
Yeah.
I just had a bad attitude, and I remember just getting called in. I didn't even see it coming. So, because I was still on probation. So
okay.
4 months.
Yeah.
Calling, and they was like, I think we made a mistake for this one. We think you're too inexperienced and too young for the role.
Oh, wow.
And that was the first time I experienced getting fired. My only time experience getting fired.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, you know, let's clarify that.
I had to clarify that.
The only time. And, you know, do you see that as like a pivotal moment in your career? Because was it like a slap up the backside for you to kind 100%. Of like, you know, buck your ideas up?
Yeah, it definitely wakes you up. And I guess sort of shakes you to the realism that it's not school anymore. Like, you can't behave like you're in a workplace now.
I agree, because the company where I'm at now, and I've been there, you know, a long time, I remember in like the first couple of weeks when I started working there, similar to you, I was in a bit of like a university mentality. So like, I was going to work tired. I don't know. I wasn't bringing 100% of myself to work, shall I say.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, and I think it's like the best piece of advice I ever got, and it's not even like crazy, but my boss at the time, you know, shout out Jen Miller if you ever listen to this, she just brought me into a room and she was just like, do you even want to fucking be here? She was just like, look, there's a great opportunity at this company, but you're doing this. She was just like, no more chances. She was like, you either grab it or you don't. And you know what, to be fair, honestly, when I said that shook me to my core, I consider that like a big turning point in my life, because a lot of the decisions I've made from that moment have led me to where I'm at now. But it took that conversation to just make me realise that I was in the real world, and like getting sacked was like a real possibility. And you know what? Yeah, you know, when you're starting out, you just don't want that on your CV. It's like, because that could be a big knock of confidence. Was it a knock of confidence to you?
Again, because I still had that sort of teenager attitude, like, oh, whatever, I'll get another job. I don't need them. Mm. And I had that attitude. And I remember my dad had to sit me down after that as well.
Okay.
Like, he saw me, similar to what you were saying your boss had said to you, like, he was like, this is the real world. Like, you've got an opportunity to do really well here. Like, you obviously have something now. Like,
Yeah. So with that, what did you do? Where was next for you?
So So this is where I met like Lewis and everyone. So I started, I won't say, but it was a construction company.
Started
working for them. So that's what the bulk of my career was, to be fair.
Okay. What was your first role there?
So my first role there, I was expense and sales ledger assistant.
Okay, expense and sales ledger assistant.
Yeah.
I got many questions from this job. So first of all, how many years were you there?
I was there for 7.5 years.
7.5 years. In that time, how many roles do you think you did?
So three roles, I think.
Okay,
three roles.
Okay, we got it. We got three roles. So expense ledger assistant was the first one. How long did you do that for? What did it involve?
It was four roles, by the way. I'm just four.
Okay.
As I was just thinking, working up. Yeah. So expense assistant and expense and sales ledger assistant, I was that for like 4 months. It was a simplistic job.
Okay.
Like, very, very simplistic.
But I think this is like good to know, right? Because, you know, just to kind of bring it back, you're a person who's not been to university. You don't have crazy amounts of experience. This is just showing to people that you've got to start somewhere, right? And even if it's a simplistic job, it gets your foot in the door to somewhere else. Carry on.
That's the key thing, gets your foot in the door. So, very simplistic job. It was literally reviewing employee expenses. So, like,
oh, okay. Do you know they've got apps for that now?
Yeah.
So like, that's like redundant.
When you hear like the process of how we had to do this, like, people would send their expense receipts in envelopes, and every morning there'd be a big box next to my desk, and I would just sit there, open the envelope, go through the receipts, process it into the system.
That's so mad.
And this was like, the company had like 3,000 employees.
That's so mad. So you had to do like 3,000 employees worth of expenses.
So it'd be like, I'd say on average, it'd be like a few hundred every single month.
Yeah,
and then on top of that, like, I was working as a sales ledger assistant as well, so like just processing invoices and things like that. Simplistic stuff, but it was the start.
And then I suppose when you've got your foot in the door at this company, was there a plan? Like, okay, I'm doing this assistant role, but I want this role. Like, I want to be like this person. Like, did you have a clearer picture of what it is you wanted to do at this time?
Yeah, definitely. I was like, I want to become a project accountant in this company.
Mm.
So obviously, that's not what I do in my final role now, but this, everyone sort of falls into their final job, don't they?
Yeah, that's very true.
At that point in my career, I was thinking, yeah, I want to be a project accountant.
Okay.
That's what I want to do, and I'll work my way up through the accountancy team and get there.
Okay, so the expenses and the ledger assistant, from there, you said you did that for about 4 months. How is it you've made the transition and, you know, you've gotten off the base and onto level one? Yeah. How did that work?
So obviously, put the work in, so they can see that I've got decent work ethic at this point. And there was someone at the company at the time who was sort of the person who was managing the team, also managed tax. So like, I'm trying to think out how to talk about the links between employee expenses and tax without being really boring. But basically, there's a direct linkage between like the tax manager needing to have to review certain things, mm-hmm. that form part of the expense process. Mm-hmm. And that sort of opened up the door for me to start doing small pieces of tax work, because at the time he was a one-man band. So
yeah.
I just got to help him very, very small things. Saw I had a bit of ability. And
yeah.
And that's, yeah, when I moved into the next role, which was tax assistant.
Okay, and sorry, just going back to that role and that the lead up into the tax assistant role, was you doing this in the working day, or was you having to come in early and leave late in order to find time to assist this guy in his role? How did it work? Because I know some people, they always, especially in my job now, great piece of advice I've got is, if you want to become a manager or you want to take that step up, you need to be doing the role of the person above you,
yeah.
Right? And nobody says do the role, you just have to do it. So I don't know what it was like for you.
Similar-ish. So like, I'd have to find time to obviously make everything fit into one. Like, it was still, I still had to do the
all the expenses.
Expenses piece.
Yeah.
And then I'd also have to do the tax work. The sales ledger stuff, that fell away.
Okay.
Because as you said, like, systems improved over the years. Like, didn't need me to process.
Shout out Expensify, Conquer, all them things.
Conquer, cheese.
Yeah.
So that's, and I just started getting small pieces of tax work.
Okay.
And I was like, I kind of get this. Like, yeah. It works for me, yeah.
Okay, so then you said it was tax assistant was the next role.
Yeah.
And was it just like a smooth process? Did you have to interview for the role, or did they kind of like, he's already doing the role, so it was just like a changing job title and then you didn't have to do that stuff anymore?
Yeah, just a changing job title, small pay rise, very, very small pay rise. And then that became my new role.
Okay, actually, no, I'm not even going to say that. I was going to say, how, when you say small pay rise, or small, because small to us might not be small to other people, you know, because obviously I think we're in a fortunate position where we've seen some stupid things happen to our salaries. But like, if you're going to say something like £500 or a K, like, that's some people's reality. So just be careful. Is all, yeah, so.
Yeah. We won't go into numbers.
We won't go into numbers. Okay, so the tax assistant role. So 4 months. How long do you do this tax assistant role for?
So that was probably like a year and a half.
Okay.
And it was just, yeah, I just started taking on more and more tax work. The expense stuff completely fell away at this point as the team grew, younger people came in underneath.
How old are you at this point?
I must be early to mid 20s.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, 22, 23, yeah, at this
point.
And yeah, just the more experience I gained, the more complex work I started taking on. Then the tax team's grown as well, so we're getting sort of more tax technical people coming into the business. And that's helping my knowledge as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just get to a point where eventually I'm sort of managing parts of the tax processes within the company completely by myself, and I get a promotion again.
Okay. Before we get into that, the question I wanted to ask is, so obviously you're part of this construction company, and, you know, we know a lot of accountants. I feel like accounting and tax is all like a similar umbrella. Have you had to do any exams at this point? Have you had to become like a qualified like tax person? What does that process look like whilst you're working?
Yeah, so definitely. So the accountancy qualifications were done already when I was working in the earlier job.
Oh, okay.
The tax qualifications now, so I've had to do something, sounds very similar to the first one I did. Now it's called ATT.
Okay, so you did AAT and now ATT.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, after my name is AAT, ATT.
And how long did that take?
That took longer. That tax exams are flipping painful.
I've heard.
They're painful. And obviously you're trying to do this at the same time you're working.
Yeah,
and
so of course.
I was doing it whilst I was at the construction company. So if I'd done it in the company I work for now, when I was more junior, you get like block study
days
leave.
And stuff.
So
yeah.
Like you'll do like a month on, 2 months off. Whereas at, like, yeah, that company, the construction company, they're not a, it's, they weren't accountant, it wasn't an auditor or accountancy firm, so
they didn't really understand the stresses. Yeah. So it's like, they didn't really care like that.
You do it in your own time, and so there was a couple of other people doing studies as well in the same team, like doing their accountancy qualifications. I was doing my tax qualifications, and I would go to college in the evening. Said I was at, shout out BPP College, my G's.
All the acronyms today.
So everyone goes and gets their law and tax qualifications.
Okay.
So yeah, I was doing that in the evenings, and then like I'd get like, I think it was 2 days study leave a year, and I'd use that to go to sit my exams.
Okay. I think, you know, something that's clear, and you know, we've not even gotten up until the present day, is that, and I think, you know, people really need to get to terms with this, there's no gimmies in life. I think... One key piece of feedback I've always heard is if it was easy, everyone would do it, but not everybody does it. So, you know, going to college after work, studying and working at the same time, it's not for everyone, but you've done it, you've put the work in, and, you know, look where you've gotten to today. So, you know, with that, you said that you were the tax assistant and then you started managing some tax processes at work.
Yeah.
So that's led to a promotion. What's your job title now?
So now it's assistant tax manager.
Okay.
So wasn't assistant tax manager for too long.
Okay.
But yeah, that it, essentially...
Anyone under you?
No one under me at
okay,
this point.
Cool, cool, cool,
yes,
cool.
It wasn't really managing people, it was more managing processes.
Okay, cool.
But there'd be people within the team who would sort of support me, but I wasn't their direct manager, of course.
Yeah, I get you. And with all the work that you've done up until this point, is it all internal? So my job, I work with a lot of different clients, and I love it. I get to like travel all over, hence the podcast. Yeah, did you deal with people outside of your organisation, or was it just strictly people within the organisation?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so this it's all internal tax affairs. So yeah, at this point, it's only dealing with my client. Essentially, would be the company I work for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it, and I think the company, like a big part of it, was also the company that I work for. There's a lot of. Remember that I said at the beginning that you want to be at that age, you want to be in the city, you want to be amongst loads of young people as well.
Yeah.
Because it's not work. You also do want to have the play side as well.
You were in Moorgate, weren't you?
Yeah.
I know where the office is. Yeah, wonderful office. Yeah.
So we'd come Thursday, Friday night, it was out.
That's it. Out. Work hard, play hard.
Play hard. I think early mid 20s, doing Thursday nights. Just staying out and then just going straight to the office.
Madness.
Changing the tie, and that was it.
Madness. No shower.
No shower.
No, I'm not even going to judge you, because I think everyone's been through that stage. Have you got any crazy work stories? Whilst you think, I can give one for me. So my first job out of university was at Metro Bank. And basically their offices are open 7 days a week. Like that's the USP, and I was like a business account opener or whatever.
Yeah.
And that would mean having to work Saturday and Sunday sometimes. And yeah, there were a couple of Saturday nights where I went out till 5-6 in the morning. And if you're on the early Sunday, well, yeah, you're on the early or on the late, you got to be in by like 8. And because I lived in Essex at the time, that means I had to be up at 6:30. So I think I got home at 6. I closed my eyes, opened them at 6:30, showered, into work. And that's actually the reason I like coffee, because I never used to drink coffee before having a job, but I was falling asleep, you know, actually looking at people like at my desk trying to 100%. Open accounts and stuff like that. I'm like, shit, I need coffee. So
I think that's how everyone gets into coffee, isn't
yeah
it? That's the same way as well. I was drinking, I'm like, this tastes butters,
man.
I used to get the strongest one, so I used to get a cortado to try and help wake me up.
Oh my goodness.
And I was like, this is so butters, how do people like this? But now I happily sip cortados when I'm at home.
After coming in at 5 a.m. No, I'm joking. But yeah, any crazy stories? So you said yeah, a lot of Thursday nights and Friday nights, but yeah, just kind of,
yeah, definitely, like it'd always be. And the thing is, because everybody knows the city is very close to Shoreditch as well. So like, you'd go out to all the crappy bars in and around the city. And I say crappy bars because they're all very cheesy. And then like you're licked, so you're like, I may as well go to Shoreditch.
What was your company? Yeah. What was the wine you frequented? So for us, it was Queen of Hoxton, because that was right on our road. So we were there like just way too much, or Dinorama. What was that for you guys?
So the local would be the Globe, the pub. Oh, yeah. For quick but then if it was late, same as you, it'd be the Queen of Hoxton. That's where if we ended up like on a real late night, Queen of Hoxton was
Yeah. All right, fair play. So back to work, we kind of digress there. You're an assistant tax manager now. Talk me through that. So how long did you do that for? And is that the penultimate job before the one you're at now? Or
I was assistant tax manager for a while. And then obviously got the final promotion and became tax manager.
Okay.
Now I'm pretty much managing all the processes by myself. I'm getting to do things like cool things like go out on site and talk to the construction managers and talk through the tax affairs of each individual project.
How good is it being able to travel for work, by the way? Because there are a lot of people who do like 9-to-5 jobs, and you know, pre-COVID, you're stuck in a cubicle, you come in, you sit, you get back pain. But being able to break up your day, like I'm fortunate enough to get to travel around Europe and stuff like that. Being able to just hop on a plane and, you know, do some sightseeing and then go to bed, wake up and do your meeting. It's just so nice to be able to break up your week like that. Like, it keeps work interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think, so in my current role, I definitely like get the opportunity to travel abroad. But yeah, when I was at
the last company,
it was definitely more like UK travel. So certain members in my team that I used to get really jealous. So like, there's something called global mobility, where you manage like all of the tax affairs of people who are working abroad for the company on short-term positions. And there was a guy in my team. He'd go to Amsterdam every other week. He'd be in Switzerland. I'm like, I'm just going out to the Olympic Village in Stratford. Like. But it's still great.
It's something. Do you know what I mean?
Other people that come to like, oh, Simon gets to go on site. Like, So that used to be cool. And then I think I got to a point where I was like, so as I said, 7.5 years. I was like, I feel like I've kind of burnt out at this company now. Like, and it's not even there was a ceiling. I could have just kept progressing up and up and up.
Mm.
But I wanted a new challenge. Just wanted to do something different. Made the big decision to now start looking at the really big companies.
Yeah.
To see if I can get into those.
Yeah.
I managed to get one working in Canary Wharf.
Yeah.
One
of the big four, isn't it? We can't go into detail, but
before I got to that one, this is my current role, and I did two. I did like contracting roles for a bit.
Okay. Yeah, you did. So, how was that? Talk to me how you decided to go into contracting, because I think I was actually going to mention it earlier. Like, oh, why didn't you just go into contracting? It's very lucrative, isn't it? Because obviously you're not on a permanent, you don't take holidays. So because of that, you get the higher salary.
Yeah.
Was that taken on advice? How do you stumble into contracting?
Do you want me to be brutally honest? How I actually first got into contracting.
Yeah.
It's when I saw how much you can get as a day rate in comparison to a salary.
Oh, wow.
I was like, what? A day? You're going to pay me that?
Yeah.
Pay me that a day to do the job.
I mean,
and that's how I initially got into it. And it's just so much easier being a contractor. That I kind of do miss contracting in a way, because you don't really answer to anyone. Like, obviously you answer to whoever, like the hiring
bought person. Yeah.
But like, I remember when I was contracting, like, I just go for lunch when I'm ready. As long as I get the job done within the set time frame that they're expecting, it's all good. And obviously, if I wanted to take days off, I'd do it whenever I want. There's no issue. Obviously, it's at my loss because you're on day rate. Contracting is great.
Did you only contract for one company, multiple companies? Because you can find yourself, like, because you're not in a permanent job, like bouncing around is what I've heard.
Definitely. So I did two. I did one I'm trying to think how to describe the company. It's a big global media business, but they have a massive tax branch as well.
Okay.
They're like similar to a Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. That's as clear as I get, I guess. And then after that, I went to an asset management firm.
Yeah.
And like did some internal tax transformation projects for them. Oh yeah, so I haven't really spoken about the transformation from how I've gone from tax to transformation. When I was at when I was doing my first piece of contracting, once I'd left the construction company, the tax world's gone into this period now where everything's become digitalized. So like, as you said, with expenses, there's people are finding ways to automize everything. Tax technology has become a really big industry.
Yeah.
Now there's something new, they call it, so instead of being a tax advisor, you're a taxologist. Like, you just understand tax and technology.
Sounds like a cocktail. The taxologist.
I'll take two taxologists.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So that's now, and it's cool because it's more interesting than just doing like pure tax advisory, because now it's like I'm working with tax, but I'm also trying to find solutions with technology. So joining those two things together, it just makes the job so much more interesting. So that's, I'd started to get into that when I was contracting.
Okay.
And then that's, and the next contracting role I did, it was pure transformation. They had a specific project they wanted me to come in and do.
And they felt like the experience you had was enough. So you, gone are the days where people are like, you haven't got enough experience.
Yes. And that, my CV is really, I've got a solid CV at this point now of relevant experience.
Just on CVs, do you get yours professionally done? Like, is it something that you've just put together yourself and you just add to it? Or is it something that you like look to review?
I've just put it together myself. You can get professionally done.
Right. Yeah, a few hundred pounds. Not that I've done that work, you know, but I know some people who spend like a lot of money on their CVs, because apparently it can really like help you stand out from the crowd.
Oh, that's crazy. I didn't even know you could do it. Yeah.
I think, can I just say something on like getting your CV professionally done, sending £100-£200? There is no bigger investment you can make than on yourself, right? It's just like why you pay money to go to the gym, why you pay a little bit more money for vegan food or healthy food. You cannot put a price on yourself. And if you've got aspirations to go way, way, way high, then £100, £200 for a buff CV to get your foot in the door at some of the biggest companies, all these companies that you want to work at, I think it's a no-brainer. Yeah. Although, you know, recruiters might say something otherwise, but I think it's a good investment. If, you know, I know people that have paid for CVs, it's because they don't want to use recruiters. Mm. They want to go directly because, you know, recruiters, they eat money.
Yeah, from very, you. Very true.
But yeah, that takes me back. Okay, so you're in transformation now, but going back to the contractor versus perm, what is the culture? Like, did you feel like, because you're now a contractor, were you contracting as part of a big team? Were you on your own again? Did you feel disconnected? Like, what was the situation like?
Yeah, you definitely feel very disconnected. And I feel like there's almost like, sometimes there's a dislike, not a dislike, but it's you're there to do a job and they know you're on day rate as well. I remember
a bit like a mercenary.
Yeah, Yeah, you're not really part of the team. Essentially, it's like they'd be like team drinks, and it's like, oh, can the contractor really come though? Can we fly?
Really?
Yeah.
That's so wild.
But I'm someone who I'm easy to get along with socially. So if it, like once we get to know me, it's like, just invite me along.
Okay. So, would you say that the day rate that you were getting, it's worth that lack of culture?
Yes.
I knew that was coming, but you know, just for people listening.
I'll miss your leaving party and go splash my pee with my actual friends. That's fine.
That's okay. Yeah. Okay, nice. So, all right. You've done your two contracting roles.
Yeah.
And then you've made the decision to go back into perm work or, yeah.
Yeah, so after the second contracting role, it was a question of and now I feel like I need a solid block on my CV again. So I need to get myself into a company where I think I can see myself being there for a while now. So I had a couple of interviews, and then I'd accepted a job with one company.
I remember.
And I was pretty much almost in the door. And then
what was the job title?
So that one would have been, I'm trying to remember what that one was. That was like internal head of tax transformation.
Taxologist.
Yeah. And then I got a last minute call from like a big four company. And yeah, like in the world of accountancy, tax and finance and audit, like if the big four is talking to you, like it's really exciting. It's like magic circle law firms, one of the big banks. It's like for our industry, that's the creme de la creme.
And by the way, I was listening to a podcast today, so without putting Simon on blast, I know the big four firms, so I'm going to say all of them. Tell me if I've got these right. So it's Deloitte, it's PwC, it's KPMG, and it's EY Ernst Young, right?
Yep.
So
that's the big four.
Yeah, that's when we talk big four, that's what we mean. And I think for a lot of people in the financial services industry, that is the creme de la creme, and that is where you are aiming for.
100%, okay. Yeah. Like they have all the biggest clients, the most interesting work, so you want to work for them at some point in your career, if you can. So yeah, had the call from them, had like a last minute interview, and then that their interview process is so long at the company that I went for.
Yeah.
Very intense. But they put an offer in for me as well. They moved very, very fast for me. So it was literally like three interviews all in 1 week.
Okay, so on that, so you've had two offers.
Yeah.
What was the process like for that? Because I know people who go through five rounds. You've got to do presentations, this, that. You said three interviews in a week.
Yeah.
What were those interviews like? Was it a task? Was it just calls with different members of the team?
Yeah, so the first one's like just getting to know you, getting to know the role, and you get to know the hiring manager and the lead partner. The second one is like it's a technical interview, so they test you on your technical ability.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one's like with the lead partner for your business unit and then the head partner for UK and Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, yeah, that's
so
it.
You did all three in a week. Was that quite intense?
It was, especially because I was also trying to keep the other
people happy. Yeah. You have not,
they're going, well, like, we've given you the offer, we want you to sign. And I hadn't actually told them at this point. And then towards the end, I told them, I was like, I've had an offer from
XYZ. Yeah.
And the funniest thing is, so the hiring manager at that company used to work for the company that was trying to hire me.
Oh, geez.
So the partner who hired me spoke to him and said, listen, we want Simon. I just found that funny that they knew each other.
And then you've obviously made the decision. And that, what was the job title for that you've ended up going with?
So this was a senior indirect tax transformation consultant.
Jeez, sounds important, man.
It sounds more important than it.
But I know from, you know, speaking to you and knowing you personally, you know, with, you know, like Uncle Ben said, with great power comes great responsibility. With the job that you're doing at the Big Four firm, the hours, they're not always great, are they? Talk me through it.
Yeah, the hours are definitely intense. And you always hear about it. And I remember telling my mum and dad about it, because my dad, he didn't work for a Big Four, but he worked for a big practice back when he was young. And he was like, it's going to be very intense. Just know, like, you're going to be putting in a lot of hours. And obviously, I was told, that's like, listen, culture's changed. Like, you'll be able to, like,
work-life balance. Yeah, work-life balance.
Everyone's
fucking bullshit, man. Yeah.
There was no balance.
No, not balance.
But at the beginning, I think especially, like, you're just so excited to be working. And like, I'm on such big projects and I'm working with massive clients. I'm like, I want to put in the work. This is great.
How big is the team that you joined?
I think at the time I joined, the team was at like 110 or something like that.
Okay. And what was the onboarding process like? Did they welcome you in well? Did they take care of you at the start?
Yeah, definitely. They're very good at that. They got like very, very, very strong processes for that. Like, you do the whole day, we meet and greet with the team, and then one thing is, it was a bit of a culture shock actually for me, from coming from like in-house, where like you have a managerial structure, don't you? Have like whoever's head of your team, you have your manager and you report to a line manager. Whereas when you work in practice, you don't have, you have a counselor, someone that you can sort of turn to for issues and so on and so forth, but then your work doesn't come direct from a manager. You have to sort of reach out to all of the different partners or directors and see if you can get involved with their work, and then you're just working for loads of different streams.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
did you enjoy that?
Yeah, it's definitely, it keeps you on your toes, and the only thing, it just causes loads of flipping meetings, so many meetings.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's
What's the latest you've ever had to work?
So I think that the latest I've ever worked, this was, we was putting a proposal together for a client that we was flying out to the Netherlands for, and we like the partner was still giving feedback right up to the last minute, so I was up until like 3 a.m.
Oh my goodness.
And then the flight was at 7:30.
Fuck that.
So I basically didn't sleep.
But then how do you, like, the thing is with that, like with me, when I travel for work, I always go a day early now because I know I'm not a morning person. Like, if you've got 3 hours sleep, how are you supposed to be switched on for the meeting? Like, do you take Pro Plus? Like, what do you do?
Cortado.
Oh, cortado, okay. Cortado.
Cortado and panini. That's all. City airport, just having a panini and cortado.
Okay, nice.
And again,
nice,
like, just
nice.
The buzz. So this is like my first proposal abroad as well. So I'm buzzing. Even though I'm tired, I'm buzzing the airport and I can't wait to get there.
Yeah. Okay, completely random. Benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, when you're self-employed, you don't get any benefits. We don't know what company you're at, but we know it's a prestigious company. What are your benefits like at your company? Are they good? Are they bad? Is there anything that sticks out to you that, you know, you're like, this is sick. I wouldn't do this normally.
I'm trying to think which one's standard. But yeah, the benefits are good in terms of like the standard, the pension, health, private healthcare, so on and so forth. If you get all those standard ones. Cycle to work scheme is an important one for me because everyone knows, I'm big on cycling.
Yeah.
So I can,
A lot of money saved there, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah. Still a lot of money spent to be
Yeah.
Sophie will know in our spare room, filling out with so much bike crap.
what do I use? I think I go to the dentist all the time because I get stuff back. So I think I've spent like, I don't know, £500 that I've combed back this year or over the last 2 years at the dentist. Not that there's anything wrong with my teeth, you know.
I took out dental insurance because I haven't gone to the dentist for like 7 years. I was shook to go to the dentist.
Mm.
And then it turns out nothing wrong with my teeth. But, I mean, I've got dental insurance, so it's there if need be.
Okay. So that brings us to the current date. To this process that you've kind of gone on and everything we've discussed today, that's probably been like, what, 10, 12, 13 years?
Yeah.
What do the next 10, 12, 13 years look like for you? Do you still have the drive? Do you feel like, you know, you're almost at the top or, you know, yeah. How are you... When you first get into work,
yeah,
like I did a 5-year plan, are you always readjusting, doing 5-year plans? Like, yeah, what does it look like for you?
Yeah, definitely. Always set myself a 2 and a 5-year plan.
Okay.
So, yeah, definitely want to still keep progressing higher up the ranks. There's like 3 more steps for me to get as high as I pretty much can get, to be fair. But it's also, I think I'm getting to a state, I think lockdown brought this realization to a lot of people that... there's a lot more to life than just putting everything into your 9-to-5, and there's other ways that you can sort of find fulfillment and also make money from that.
Mm.
So mm. I think within my next, in the next 2 years, definitely keep progressing within my career. But within the next 5 years, I want to start doing more things on the side as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and with that, do you think 9-to-5 is the way to go? So I looked at my friend Lewis, he retweeted something the other day, which is so true. People think that you can't make $100,000 working 9-to-5. That's complete bullshit. Like,
you can't make $100,000 yeah, 9-to-5.
But there's this common misconception that 9-to-5s are like low paying and that you can't get money to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
First of all, people put in long hours, you can get paid a serious amount of money. But with that, like you're saying, do you see yourself working for yourself? Do you always want to work for someone? And if you were to work for yourself, would it be in taxation or would it be pivoting into something else? Like, I was about to say taxologist, but it is taxation. So I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, I could definitely see myself working. I see myself working for myself. Well, that sounded weird when I said that.
Yeah.
I've done the contracting piece. I think I would definitely like to become more of like an advisor consultant at some stage in the tech space. Sort of related
booming.
To tax. Yeah. That's, yeah. There's a lot of people who've left Big Four and done something similar that, well, they've been to like director partner level.
Mm.
And they do the same thing where it's, they break off and just become consultants.
Mm.
But that'd be at a much later date, I think.
Yeah, and then, you know, we're getting to the top of the hour, but I think for people who've listened to this point, you know, Simon's had an incredible journey. Obviously, you said that your parents were in the finance industry, so they've obviously been able to give you advice. Have you had you know, many mentors throughout your career? Do you have one at the moment? Like, where do you go to get your advice for now and for the future? Is it still your mum and dad?
Mum and dad definitely probably the main people I turn to for advice in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite funny, I think every company I've worked for, this is almost going to sound like I'm going on to a race topic, but there's always been a more senior black person who's always wanted to look out for me.
And
always, not so much when I was at the construction company, but every other company I've worked for, that I've had that. And especially at this company now. So there's more senior black people who sort of want to push to make sure that we are getting to the higher positions.
Because
it's definitely like, I think you get to a certain point and all of a sudden we sort of, not disappear, but it's like, okay, all of a sudden...
Nobody looks like me in this room.
Yeah.
So,
I've always had someone who, like I say, looks like me, but someone I can turn to who can relate. So I've got that in my company now, someone who's a good mentor for that.
Perfect. And, you know, that actually leads me nicely into something else. Like, with all the progression that you've had, do you feel like you've progressed at an accelerated rate, maybe because of your skin, or do you think you've been held back? Has there been any racial prejudice throughout your career?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I feel I definitely believe I know that the racial prejudice is definitely definitely out there. And I feel
especially
like
especially
in finance, I feel like I am one of the few. I have actually been very, very lucky in the sense that it hasn't really held me back or affected my career in any way.
No microaggressions apart from at that job where they fired you.
Apart from that, I gave them hella attitude. But no, not really. I've been very lucky in that sense. That hasn't been plain obvious to my face. There could have been something if I actually looked back and sat down and thought about it deeply, maybe there might have been, but nothing in plain sight to me. That I look at my career and I feel like I've progressed quite well. Especially when you take into consideration, as you said, I didn't go to uni, didn't really have a plan, and somehow it's still managed to come together. And I don't forget, there hasn't really been any holdbacks for me.
Do you know why I'm so jealous of you? As I hear you say that, you didn't go to university. That means, and you know, we haven't talked about numbers, but for all of these years that Simon has worked, people, he's never had to pay back a fucking student loan.
Don't know what that is.
All of that has been going into his pocket. Do you know how much money gets taken?
Into the club's pocket, just more drinks.
That's why shots are always on Simon. No. But it's a big thing. I think, like you said, it's something that you don't really know about because you didn't go to university. But there's a massive, massive saving there, especially as you get older, you earn more money. There's a lot more that comes out of your pocket. So do you feel like you missed out by not going to university? Is it something that you look back on? Obviously, you've got a lot of friends who went to university. Do you feel like you'd be at the same stage of your life now or further ahead if you went to university?
I can definitely say I don't think I'd be further ahead. I'd say, like, in the role that I'm in now, I'm pretty much level with all the people who went to university at the same sort of time that I would have gone to university. Mm-hmm. So I think I've still landed on my feet and in the exact same position where I should have been. I think I missed out on, like, the social element, and like, because I think when I talk to other friends, even like how I met all of you guys as well, like you make a lot of friends in university. That's
you
a
really
big chunk of your life when you make
you really
friends
do, yeah.
for the rest of your life. And I sort of had that gap where I was in the working world, so then my friends were formed at work. So that's like how I met Lewis and everyone.
That was
my print of uni. But I think that's what I did miss out on.
In terms of
progress in my career, I don't think it's necessary.
Okay.
I think the world's getting to that stage now. You can be a school leaver and go straight into a job and have professional vocations that get you to the same point.
1,000%. So, just rounding up then, and I'm just asking you point blank, there was a massive social element of university. So when I talk about uni, if you ask me to do it 100 times, even though my degree has nothing to do with what I do now, I'm always going back for that social element. Knowing what you know now, meeting all the people that you've met, if you had the opportunity at 17 to go to university, even if just for that social element, would you go, yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay.
I definitely would. Just for the lifestyle of uni. Yeah. I definitely did miss out on that. But who knows, I'd probably have been deader in jail if I did.
So everything happens for a reason, right? And I mean, it's brought us up until this point today. Just the last few points before we close off for today's podcast. I think, obviously, you know, this is the Vibes and Tribes podcast. We're all about that work hard, that play hard. So, you know, we've spoken a lot about work. When it comes to play, you know, where's your favourite place that you've been to travel, and where would you like to go? Ooh. Where should I podcast on?
Favourite place to travel? I'd say of all the places I've been in the world, it's definitely Far East Asia. So it'd be a tight one between Thailand and the Philippines, but I'd say Philippines just knocks it.
Okay.
But that kind of ties into the fact that I was older, I had a lot more money, so I could go to the nicer hotels. The Philippines is the best place I've ever been. It's such a beautiful.
Watch this space for a podcast on the Philippines. Then we're gonna have to pick your brains on that.
I've got loads to spill on that.
All right. Well, yeah. I think you know, we got it, Si. So for anybody who you know, is going through life, doesn't know what they want to do, this is an avenue. Okay, you don't have to go to university. You can get into tax. Finance isn't as boring as everyone makes it out to be, and especially with, you know, the technological innovations that are happening, there are some really interesting jobs like becoming a taxologist. So this was Getting to Know the Tribe with Simon Swanson. I don't know if you want to plug any socials.
I don't really got any socials.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, if you've made it to this point of the episode, guys, please make sure to like, share, subscribe. do all them teams. We've got so many interesting people we're going to get in the hot seat. But with that, it's been Vibes and Tribes over and out.